This work is exceptional, a system call for event-driven servers. And in this work, we're advocating that the building block primitives in the operating system to support event-driven servers should be changed. And so at OSDI last year, we presented an operating system mechanism called exceptional system call, which is used for user space and kernel space to communicate more efficiently on modern architectures, specifically for multi-core processors. And we targeted this technique for highly threaded servers, and we managed to get doubling of performance of Apache. But the feedback we got from some folks in the systems community was, well, these results are very interesting for a threaded application, but everyone knows that if you want high performance, you don't use threading. Threading is inherently inefficient. What you really do is you write an event-driven server. And so event-driven servers continue to be popular because of their performance. And so in this work, we wanted to show that this exceptional system call technique could also yield benefits for event-driven applications. So this is what this talk is about. And I'll show results using exceptional system call to support Memcached and Nginx, which are two popular event-driven applications. So before I get into the details of the talk, let's talk a little bit about event-driven server architectures. So event-driven server architectures are used to so that you can support multiple I/O requests on the fly using one or very few execution contexts. And these can be threads or processes. And they're typically referred to as an alternative to the thread-based server architecture, where you rely on large numbers of threads to do I/O. And the idea of event-driven architectures at a high level is you want to strip out all blocking operations from your code. So what you do is you divide your program logic into chunks that do not block. So these are known as stages. And after each stage, you register interest in an event. And that's usually done by the operating system. And then when the operating system sees that that event has occurred, it notifies the application, and there's some dispatcher that moves the application logic to the next stage. And of course, to avoid idle time, the applications have to multiplex multiple independent stages. So let me just try to give you a more concrete example. You have a simple network server code here with a few of the operations that network servers do, accepting a new request, reading the content of that request, writing out the results, and closing that socket. And you have some logic in between that is non-blocking. So what you would do to build an event-driven version of this, you separate that each piece of logic into a separate stage. So we have five stages in this application. And you have a dispatcher or an event loop that will trigger each stage depending on the events you've received back. And for Unix, you typically have a few options to build your dispatcher. So you have non-blocking I/O and allied with primitives like pull, select, epoll as your event notification system. Or you can use asynchronous I/O, which is slightly more modern interface. And so, as I mentioned, although event-driven servers may complicate your programming model a little bit, it's really used because of its performance characteristics. So here we have a comparison between two web servers running on Linux. So you have Apache that uses threads and Nginx using events. And we increase the concurrency on the x-axis, and you see the throughput on the y-axis. So not only does Nginx deliver about 70% more requests per second, it also degrades gracefully when you increase the concurrency. Now, I know there's been a lot of research on improving the performance of thread-based servers, but still today, if you pick these Linux applications, this is the performance you will observe. But however, there are a few issues with current Unix event primitives. So one of the issues is that they do not cover all of the system calls. So typically, they work only with operations that have a file descriptors. So files and socket-based I/O operations. And secondly, there's an inherent overhead also associated with event-driven programming, which is tracking progress of I/O operations really require a lot of communication between the operating system and the application. It's typical that operations don't succeed on the first try, and you have to retry them until you finish the I/O operation that you want. And our previous work showed that this fine-grained mode switching can kill up to half of your processor efficiency. So you're really losing a lot of your performance potential. So this is our system, exceptionalist system call, which we just call Flex. And we had presented two of the components before, which was the foundation, which was Flex, and the threading library that allowed you to run unmodified pthreads binaries on top of our system. So today I'm presenting support for event-driven applications through a library called libflex. One of the differences between our previous approach is that you actually have to modify applications in order to make use of our system. And so with using libflex, as I mentioned, we modified memcached, and we've managed to get throughput improvements of 35%, and Nginx web server more than doubling the throughput. And so the benefits of using our system for event-driven applications are, first of all, our system is general purpose. So any system call that you would like to be asynchronous, it supports it well. The kernel implementation is non-intrusive in that you don't have to add special code for every single type of system call. It also facilitates multiprocessor execution. I'm going to give you an example of that in the end, where a single user space thread was able to generate enough work to keep three other cores busy doing operating system operations. And most importantly, we see improved processor efficiency as we reduce the number of user and kernel mode switches. And for multi-core scenarios, we have cores that are dedicated to a specific mode. So let me quickly summarize exceptionless system call. So instead of having applications issue software traps or processor exceptions to get into kernel mode, what we do is that we sidestep the user kernel mode boundary by writing requests into shared memory. And then inside the operating system, we have little threads that are used to execute the work that is scheduled within that shared memory. So our interface is just a page full of entries, and each entry is a request. And say you want to do a write system call, you just find a free entry in this page, populate it with the arguments that you would have originally done by registers, and just issue a submit in the status field. And you do something else in the meanwhile. So this looks very much like what an event-based loop would do. And then in the background, the operating system will execute the work and modify the status to done. And finally, the application can look and continue with its execution, getting the return code from this memory page as well. And the other part of our system is the system call threads that are kernel-only threads, but they are part of the application process. So they share the same address space as the process that it belongs to, and it shares things like file descriptor table, permissions, and whatnot. And their main goal is to pick up entries from the system call page and execute them in the background. And so you can schedule these threads, multiple of these threads, on multiple cores, and you can also allow them to block independently, and you can have another system call thread pick up more work. And one of the things we presented as well on top of this system, you can do certain types of optimizations like dynamic multi-core specialization. So here's an example of a four-core system. And the top two cores are running two user mode threads, but doing no operating system work on those cores. And then the bottom left core, which is core two, you have only system call threads. So you're only doing operating system work. And this is interesting because you can specialize the contents of the processor caches, TLB, branch predictor, to contain state specific to that mode. And communication happens through these shared pages that and on a physical system, you have shared caches that you can communicate contents of this shared page very quickly. And so for event-driven servers, we built an asynchronous system call library. It is very similar to libevent for those of you who are familiar, but instead of operating at the file descriptor granularity, it operates on system calls. So the idea is you ship a system call with an associated callback, and after that work is done, the dispatcher can then call the callback to go on to the next stage of execution. So there are a few components that I describe in more detail in the paper, but I'm just going to go through the main API for the purpose of the talk. So at the top there, lines 1 through 5, we have a control block, which we use to register the callback and also to offer the return code of the system call. And you have, on line 7, variants of flex system call. And this system call can be reads, writes, accepts, et cetera. So you just pass in the control block populated with your information and the regular system call arguments that you would have had for that system call. So just as a quick example, we have an asynchronous accept here. So we begin on line 10 by setting up 9, 10, 10 by setting up the control block. So we want to say after you do an accept, let's handle this accept. And the way we issue it is on line 11, you have flex accept, so we pass in the control block and all the other arguments you would have done in a normal accept. And so this will happen in the background, and you have to find some other work to do. Once that is done, your dispatcher will call into the handle accept with the control block as a parameter, and you can get the return code, which is a socket descriptor. And you can use that subsequently to do other things like read from that socket. And so let me begin by describing the two applications that we ported to this library. So the first is Memcached, which is a popular in-memory key value store system. It actually has a very simple code base, 8,000 lines of code, and it uses libevent native as its way to do asynchronous operation or asynchronous I/O. And so to modify Memcached was actually not a big effort. It was a little less than 300 lines of code, and we simply transformed what were libevent calls to libflex calls, and everything was mostly in a single file. And in particular, Memcached mostly does socket operations, and the code was already structured in stages, so it was pretty natural to port this application. Now, Nginx, which is according to Netcraft, is the most popular event-driven web server, has a much larger code base, 80,000 lines of code, and it's much more complex code base than Memcached. And it doesn't use libevent, it natively uses non-blocking I/O and asynchronous I/O. Although I modified also a little less than 300 lines of code, this is one case where measuring lines of code does not measure the complexity for porting. It took me about 4 times longer to port Nginx than it did Memcached. And so the socket-based code was already mostly asynchronous in Nginx, so they were divided into stages already, and it was natural to use libflex on it. Unfortunately, all the file system calls were not asynchronous. So example fstat, which tries to look at the permissions of a file, or getdens that tries to look at the content of a directory, there was no asynchronous version in Nginx. And so I had to divide that code into multiple stages, and that took a little more effort. And also we had to handle variables that were allocated on the stack and passed into system call as system call arguments. So we don't support that, so you have to reallocate that those variables on the heap. And so to evaluate our system, we are showing an implementation that we did on Linux 2.6.33. We ran these experiments on a Nehalem Core i7 with four cores. We had a client connected through a dedicated 1 gigabit network. And the workloads that we ran was on memcached was memslap, which comes with the library package for memcached. And on the server side, we had about 30% of the time being spent on user mode and 70% of the time on kernel mode. And we ran HTTP perf on Nginx, and that turned out to have a 25% user mode split and 75% kernel mode. And for the graphs, I'm going to show Linux results, default Linux results tagged as epoll, and libflex just tagged as flex. And so for memcached executing on four cores, we see about a 30% performance improvement once the concurrency of requests passes around 64 clients. And one interesting thing about this execution is that we needed to use a single, because of the split between user and kernel, we were able to use a single core in user mode generating system calls that were able to fill up three cores that were only executing kernel mode. And more interesting than just the raw throughput numbers is looking at what's going on inside of the processor. So we use harder performance counters to measure some processor metrics here. And I've divided them user mode execution on the left and kernel mode execution on the right. And the most important metric is cycles per instruction. So it summarizes the efficiency of execution. The lower the cycles per instruction, the more efficient you're executing. And for the other metrics, I plotted the misses in a specific structure in the processor. So also the lower the misses, the better. And I filtered out parts of the processor that were not impacting the execution of this specific server. So we see that the user mode execution improves by at least 40%. And the kernel doesn't improve by that much. Well, this is to be expected since kernel mode execution was dominating execution most of the time in the previous setup. And because of that, most of the processor structures were filled with kernel content. And user mode had a hard time reusing its items. But now that we're able to separate execution, we see much better CPI. And a lot of it comes from the instruction cache having a lot less misses. And so let's move on to looking at Nginx. I'm going to show one core result, but we also have two core results in the paper. Here we have on the x-axis increasing requests per second, and on the y-axis seeing how it copes with the added requests. So we see that using Flex, we have up to 100% improvement, so a doubling in throughput once you reach a significant amount of load. And again, if we look at the efficiency of execution, we see that user mode decreases its CPI by half, so even more than we saw in memcached, and we see improvement in the number of misses for more of the processor structures. So we have L1, dcache, and icache. We're all constraining the performance of Nginx. And so to conclude, current event-based primitives in Unix operating system, they have some inherent overhead. And really, it comes down to the fact that to track progress of I/O operations, there's a lot of communication that happens between user mode and kernel mode. So to overcome this overhead, we presented libflex, which is an exceptional system call library for event-driven applications. We think it has four main advantages over current event-based primitives. So it's general purpose in that it works for any system call. It has a non-intrusive kernel implementation, so you don't have to add code specifically for a new system call that you want to support. It can facilitate multiprocessor execution, and you see much improved processor efficiency. And so we ported Memcached and Nginx to our library, and we saw performance improvements between 30 and 120%. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Abel Gordon from IBM Research. Okay. Very nice work, really like that. I have two questions.
Okay.
The first one is with regard to the configuration. You were using a single socket configuration, right?
That is correct, yes.
Did you try to see what will happen if you have two different sockets and maybe the kernel threads will be running in a different socket than the user space threads? Something that you're...
So I haven't done actual experiments on a dual socket system, but what I would say is that I don't think it would, I would organize the threads across sockets. So most likely I would try to keep system call threads that belong to a certain process or user mode thread onto the same locality domain, because you have the sharing of system call entries that need to be communicated back and forth. So it's really advantageous to take advantage of the shared caches and the on-chip interconnect to communicate those lines very quickly. So if you do have multiple sockets, you probably have to split your execution slightly different so that you may have one user mode thread in one socket and the system call threads sharing that socket separated from the other user mode thread.
Okay, and the second question, with regards to interrupts, I mean, that's, you know, some kind of exceptions that are not coming from the user space are coming from the hardware.
Right.
Did you do any kind of affinity or something? I mean, interrupts were arriving to any possible core or they were arriving to the kernel?
Interrupts were being sent to cores where system call threads were actively working on. So I didn't talk about this too much, but our system tries to increase and diminish the number of cores that are running system call work dynamically based on what the application behavior is. And when you wake up a new core to do system call work, you also allow so you change the APIC controller to allow interrupts to go to that core. So there is some sort of matching between cores that are doing system call work and cores that are allowed to issue interrupts.
Okay, thank you.
Peter Desnoyers, Northeastern. This is fascinating work, and I couldn't help thinking, looking at your diagrams, this looks very much like the next level down, the deferred work queues going to an I/O device. And do you see any parallels between some of the control you're doing and, you know, for instance, what Irfan Ahmad was talking about yesterday with interrupt coalescing and so on?
Yes, so definitely. So one of the, I guess, works that inspired me was a work by, I guess, Peter Droschel, Lazy Timers, I believe that's the name of the work, where they observed, Soft Timers, okay, sorry. Where they observed the same behavior where if you coalesce execution of interrupt handling, you see much better iCache and dcache behavior. But I guess what I'm doing is not from the hardware up, it's from the application down.
Thank you.
Sure.
Keith Adams, Facebook. Really enjoyed your talk. First question was Memslap touching Memcached over the TCP version of the Memcached protocol or UDP?
No, so I used the default setting, which was using TCP, okay. Not UDP.
Okay, and so that sort of falls into my next question here, which is, you know, you obviously had a really high proportion of kernel work here happening on CPU. Is it fair to say that sort of most of the win here kind of came from turning this onto its edge so that you could partition a user core away from kernel cores? I mean, is that your intuition here? It seemed like that CPI graph was telling us that.
Right. So part of it is, but we have one core numbers. So say you only have one core available. Mm-hmm. And just for the fact that you can batch operations, as in stay in user mode for a long time and then stay in kernel mode for a long time, you get most of the benefits that you see on multiple core system.
Right. And finally, like a question about, you know, the reason Memcache exists is not as a throughput optimization, right? It's when we measure Memcache performance, it's in terms of observed latency.
Okay.
And I'm actually concerned that some of what you're doing in some ways might be perceived as basically queuing, right? Might be perceived as buffering. And I'd be really curious how this impacted the distribution of client-side latency.
Yeah, so I guess that is a good question. I don't have numbers for that. The only thing I do have numbers for are for the Apache bench on Engine X.
But so, like, what did like the 75th percentile do, right? Because like, because median latency boils down, you know, average latency boils down to throughput too. But you know, what did the curve look like? I guess before and after is what I'd be curious.
Yeah.
About.
So up to the 99th percentile, which is what Apache gives you, you have similar results to this. But I think you're right. It would be nice to look at the distribution for Memcached. I guess the client didn't give me any latency feedback, and maybe I should modify the client to give me that information and redo these tests.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Michael Dexter, and I'm curious, does this introduce security risks bringing these external applications as close to the kernel through the syscalls?
So, with respect to security, I guess the fundamental property that I'm relying on is the MMU, right? So I have these pages that are per process. And so if the operating system set up the page table properly, only that process will have access to those pages. You can obviously compromise the operating system, but then there are easier ways to get to the application. So I don't see that you would have a worse security with this system.
Thank you.
Sure.
While the next speaker sets up, I have a question.
Okay.
I think it's an excellent idea to combine your exceptionless system call with event-driven service because both are kind of asynchronous. My question is not on the technical substance of your work, but rather on the event-driven server itself. I'm not a believer of it. I wonder if you can defend it. One question is, my understanding is the server itself, the user portion, only runs on one call.
Not always.
Not always, okay.
So both Memcached and Nginx, you can configure to have one thread per core, but it allows you to run on multiple cores.
But they will synchronize in some way.
So usually it's done at accept, during the accept, so there's a master thread that accepts multiple queries and then distributes them, because these operations are mostly independent.
The other concern a lot of people have with event-driven server is that it's very hard to write large programs. And I noticed that you have two applications. You said that the larger one has 80,000 lines of code. That's not large. Well, that's my big concern also. It's very hard to write serious programs in event-driven model. Do you want to defend this, or have you found large programs that use event-driven programming style that are doing really serious work?
Unfortunately, I don't have as much experience to answer that question. But fundamentally, event-driven execution looks like a distributed application. So if you are able to build very big distributed systems, you should be able to build very big event-driven applications. But
all right, thank you. Let's thank the speaker again.